At the dawn of 2020, the world was hit with a problem, a pandemic in an interconnected world. This led to a chain of crises in healthcare, economics, social welfare, and almost every other facet of our globalized way of life. Both local and international infrastructures suffered a continuous series of blows, brought upon both by necessitated measures and hesitancy in governing bodies. 2 years later, the effects of these disruptions are still permeating our day-to-day life, both on governmental and individual levels. This is what is called a wicked problem, a term coined by scholar C. West Churchman. Today, in the midst of this pandemic, still dealing with war, climate change, migration, and other issues, we will find out more about these wicked problems and how they shape our modern life. My name is Terry McDonald, and this is the Talon University Podcast. So, what is a wicked problem? In layman's terms, it is a problem that requires complex solutions owing to the complexity of the problem itself. A typical wicked problem changes, mutates, just like a virus, adjusting to overcome the solutions put forth. In the case of the COVID crisis, what at first seemed to be a clear-cut health hazard quickly spread its detriments to other aspects of societies worldwide and into the cracks of our international structures. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Benjamin Clasher. He's a lecturer of international relations and political science here at TLU, just like myself. Ben defended his doctoral dissertation on wicked problems, and his book, A Relational Approach to Governing Wicked Problems, co-authored with Peter Selig and Georg Sotla, will be published by Palgrave Macmillan later this year. In our interview today, we discussed the nature of these wicked problems, their origins and hopefully solutions, and the lessons learned from the wicked problem of the corona crisis. Hope you enjoy our conversation. Ben, welcome to the Talon University Podcast.
Yes, thanks, Terry. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, please, what is a wicked problem?
Wow, what a question to start this with. A wicked problem is... It's pretty hard to put it just in a few sentences. Maybe start with some examples. I would say the coronavirus crisis is a wicked problem. The climate crisis, the migration crisis, or what we call the migration crisis in Europe. These are some example of wicked problems. In the past, people have also talked about global terrorism, for example, as a wicked problem. So these are problems that are global with a very large scale. Many actors involved, many stakeholders involved, then we go into wicked problem territory.
Maybe it'll help if you can tell us how we distinguish them from just regular problems.
Yeah, let's try. So the wicked problem idea is actually from city planning. I think this actually helps to think about them. So it was in the 1960s, some people in Berkeley were thinking about how to plan a city, and they said, when we make an adjustment to the city, we actually have only one shot at doing this. So we put a new highway entry somewhere, we built this thing, now it's there, and now it has to kind of fit into the system. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So you have these one-shot operations at solving a problem. That's kind of where this concept comes from. And then over time, political scientists in particular have thought about this. Can we use this concept somewhere? Do we see it in our realm? And so when we engage with some of these problems, this one-shot operation thing is quite telling. So I'm facing the migration crisis and I have a choice, open the border or not. And the effect will be, you know, will be huge and I cannot kind of take it back anymore. And then this kind of continues with, we only have like these good or bad solution attempts, no right ones. So we can also never really talk about solving the wicked problems. I think that's kind of where we start. There's of course maybe a more descriptive definition of these problems. In my work and the work of my colleagues, we try to differentiate them mostly from other problems. So maybe this is how we can understand them better. And we say that we basically have three types of problems. Now, this is all very ideal, typical situation. You know, problems are fuzzy and, you know, some are wicked and sometimes they're not anymore. Maybe we can say this. But the simple problems, we call them, we know what's the problem and how to solve it. So we know all of us need ID cards every 5 years or so. The state knows this, and to solve the problem, they open the border police station here in Tallinn. You go every 5 years and get a new ID card. So it's a simple problem. We know what to do and how to solve it. And we have complex problems, we call them. They're a higher level of complexity, as it says. And we say we know what's the problem, but we don't know how to solve it. This usually comes together because we have many stakeholders now involved. They have all different ideas what to do with this problem. For example, educational reforms fit in quite nicely. So we know the problem. Our students read worse than 10 years ago, but we don't know the solution. We have many, many options to go with, you know, hire more teachers, smaller classrooms, you know, new schools, I don't know, new school system, many, many options. But we know what's the problem. And then we come to the wicked problems where we don't actually know either of these two things. So no solution is known. And also the problem itself. So again, looking maybe at the coronavirus crisis. You might say it's actually easy to solve this, I guess. We all got vaccinated and we all stay home. Pretty easy solution, but it's not that easy if you... you know, actually consider that we live in complex societies. When we stay home, then economy collapses, mental health deteriorates, all these kind of things. So maybe the problem is not just staying home. The problem is that the health crisis, you know, getting COVID, falling ill, is kind of interconnected with the economic crisis that then starts, you know, coming out of it.
And I guess an enforcement crisis of who...
Yeah, who makes the rules. So we have a crisis of, you know, experts, expert knowledge even. So all of this is actually the problem, and we cannot clearly point to anything anymore. So we cannot say, like even the educational crisis, our students cannot read. That's the problem here in the coronavirus crisis.
You have a shifting problem. With, like, it's a moving target all the time. Oy. Yes. Okay. So, well, speaking of the pandemic, like, you wrote that this was going to be a wicked problem when this first started coming about. Could you shed some light on how you could foresee that this was going to fit into the category of wicked problem?
I was lucky that I was just working on this wicked problem concept, and we were trying to think about the migration crisis in these terms and what makes it a wicked problem. And maybe also here to illustrate further, the migration crisis is not just people coming to Europe, but it's a kind of a legitimacy crisis. So governments fight for their legitimacy in the you know, dealing with migrants. It's a geopolitical crisis that outside actors are trying to split the society. You know, all the kind of rhetorics.
And anyone who's interested in that can, of course, go to our earlier episode on the migration crisis.
Yes. So I was thinking in these terms that one crisis is actually made of many crises. And when this is the case, then we talk about wicked problems. And it starts out as the health crisis, coming back to the coronavirus crisis. But immediately the voices got loud about this is going to be an economic recession if we do this, if we actually stay home. And then I was like, okay, we have already two crises here. Economic and health crisis that are kind of working together. And then I read also things about education, educational problems that will occur, and maybe student generations will fall back, you know, by being homeschooled and all of this. And so I saw these different crises that make the coronavirus crisis. Yes. And I was immediately, okay, this is just what I was thinking about in the migrant crisis. So here we go.
So a wicked problem is a series of crises that come under one umbrella, basically.
Yeah. I would maybe also like to add that these crises are not, you know, independent of each other. And it starts out with, yes, the health crisis comes first, and then it creates the economic crisis, and then we kind of get rolling. But once we have the economic crisis, the crises are, and we call this a constitutive relationship. So a relationship where one crisis always affects the other and back. So it's no like one directional relationship between these crises. So I have the economic crisis, I make adjustments to it, you know, short-term money or some other policy projects. This will impact the health crisis. So people go to work now or not to work. You know, we have less cases. Then we can now go more, go back more to work. So it's a back and forth. At the same time, the educational crisis is bouncing in there too. So it's this constant back and forth between the crises. And in a way, also, it doesn't allow us to look at one crisis by itself. So when we talk about wicked problems, we always have to consider all the crises.
And how actions in one will affect governance of another.
Exactly. So it's a absolute mess when you try to understand it, but try to govern it, it's completely out of control.
Well, yeah. Moving to that, it's been almost 2 years since we've started dealing with the pandemic. Do you see any changes of how we've understood it, how we've governed it so far, or has there been new understanding gained?
Yeah, this is really tough. I mean, looking at the current wave, as we call it, which has probably been the worst of all of them. So the most cases worldwide. Okay, we should talk about different strains of the coronavirus and so on. But actually, if I look at it now, I would say we have learned nothing. If the cases are so high, there are some countries, and we are looking into them, that are extremely successful with dealing with this. For example, Taiwan, and generally Southeast Asian countries have been extremely successful with managing this pandemic, and they have shown some aspects of extreme transparency of the leadership. So they would always communicate, why do we have new regulations, how long they last, what are the reasons for it. Something that has not happened in Europe very well, I would say, and in very extreme cases in the United States or United Kingdom, where this has been completely absent. So transparency seems to be an absolute key in dealing with these crises. And then when we think about how the crises are all kind of interconnected, and you do one thing here and it affects something somewhere else, this suggests to the policymaker to need to be extremely flexible, and something that politicians are really bad at taking back something you just decided. Yeah. So you do something, and you actually have maybe a week to look at it if it works, and if it doesn't, you should alter the course. But politicians, at least many of them, have this idea of themselves that, I know what's best, I'm going to implement this now, and we're going to write this out till the end. And then we're failing basically in managing the coronavirus crisis.
I mean, I guess one could argue that if they are trying to encourage confidence in their decision making, though, constant adjustments like that also could undermine public buy-in to their solutions.
Yes, it's another wicked problem. Or it's another crisis in this wicked problem, right? Because this is one of the aspects we need to work on in the future, because as I'm also saying, these wicked problems, they don't go away. We have the biggest one still looming there, the climate crisis. We can come back to it in a moment. But we basically have to adjust, in a way, the political culture to it. We have to get away from this strong leadership type who knows what's best and let's do it. So this kind of like all-knowingly commander or something like this. And we need to be more acceptable to, swift policy changes, politicians saying they're wrong. Yes, this was a wrong decision, let's do something else. And this seems to be the best way to get through crises.
Well, you provide a good transition there, because I was going to ask you, besides the coronavirus crisis, what are some other wicked problems that we're facing in the world today?
Yeah, I think the climate crisis is by far the one that needs most of our attention. There are some more, I would say. Or the literature, the academics, and among us have identified. But this migration crisis all over the globe, it's actually not just a European problem. It's a problem in Southeast Asia and Central America, and a problem to come, exacerbated by the climate crisis as well. This is also something very interesting in the future that I'm trying to wrap my head around a little bit more, is that these crises, these wicked problems that we have identified, that they actually are also interrelated. To bring you completely a new topic, but climate crisis and migration crisis, this is going on. So this is not going away. This is going to get worse. I thought about one. Oh yeah, and maybe one that's always there too, and hasn't received that much attention, I think, in political science, public administration, is kind of the global inequality, or if you want to also domestic inequality problems, that are extremely wicked, I think, because they are also so interconnected, interrelated. You know, you can see it globally where countries are being exploited, but at the same time, you zoom into these countries where you have elites that are also exploiting people in the countries. All of this, of course, is again connected to climate change and you know, crisis of resources, and so this is something that is also always there. And then I was thinking also a little bit further ahead, if we really manage to do something about the climate crisis, it probably can only come in the form of some sort of green transition or transition of the economic system, so the capitalist world economy. And the transition, I think, is also going to be quite wicked, going to create many of these problems, maybe produces more inequality to begin with. You know, some scholars also talk about racial and colonial aspects here again. And yeah. So it's just, it's kind of everywhere.
And yeah. Another example of, I guess, of course, as soon as you change any one of these factors, as soon as you start having a policy to mitigate any one of these factors, it has spillover effects into every other. Yeah, yes. Okay. Thank you. Yes. That's a lot clearer. Well, have there been wicked problems in the past that humans have dealt with successfully?
Well, one of them, what we didn't mention in this list of problems is the economic crisis, 2008, 9, 10. Now, you are the expert on this one, whether we have dealt with this successfully or not. I think on the surface, it seems to be dealt with, but there's probably something more brooding underground.
I was going to say, either dealt with or managed to kick the can down the road, as they say.
But I think otherwise, this is quite a new phenomenon, and I would argue it's connected with the level of connectivity of our world. So especially these wicked problems, I'm looking at mostly these global crises, they only exist in a world that's global, that is so connected, whether it's economically, societal, culturally. You know, all of this is impossible to imagine without the internet and global flights and globalization. You know, the coronavirus, for example, is not going to become a global pandemic. Probably in the 1970s.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's...
So by increasing our connectivity, we've increased the number of stakeholders in every one of these problems.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some fear-mongering already that the more we grow together, the more of these crises are going to come, and the more they will affect us all, always.
You know? I guess, or one could argue that these problems have been occurring around the world. We've just been able to ignore them before.
Yeah, or they haven't reached this level of global reach. No real predecessor. We're learning on the go, actually.
Well, one of the things that we're facing with a lot of the big issues in society today is they can be exacerbated by misinformation. How does misinformation and like bad actors using misinformation, how does that factor into our ability to deal with wicked problems?
Yeah, well, quite a lot. So I'm thinking what I just mentioned about transparency. So this is all threatened by this instantly, being transparent, and then it could be misused or being called out as fake news and these kind of things. When we looked closer at the coronavirus crisis, for example, we also pointed out that this, we called it, you know, a crisis of knowledge, basically, that this played a really big part. People were not trusting the politicians anymore. This is kind of completely over. I think in previous generations, a politician was quite a voice of authority, and this is the leaders we elected to do this best. So this is completely gone. Everybody, maybe rightfully so, even to a degree, thinks they know better than politicians. You know, very carefully phrased. But something even more worrisome we are seeing is not just the distrust in politicians, but politicians have done something very right in dealing with the coronavirus crisis, which is involving experts, because it is a new problem. It's kind of unique in its setting. So many epidemiologists, for example, have been involved in the decision making, but their expertise has been questioned quite a lot too. So now, you know, within the anti-vaxxing and climate change denial, We have this crisis of, you know, of science, of knowledge, of experts too, and this seems to be quite worrisome to overcome. So what are we going to do with this? So this is very prominent in the coronavirus crisis and in the climate crisis has been from the start, you know. I've been reading these articles from the 1970s where, to the point, everybody has foreseen what's happened till today. And already then, everybody was like, come on, there are some academics. Let's not listen to them. So yeah, this is a big crisis of knowledge and who yields it and
institutional confidence, basically.
Yeah. And then within all of this, we have also this conspiracy rise, theory rise. So if the experts and the politicians don't have the knowledge, then it has to be somewhere else. And it's somewhere on YouTube, apparently. So yeah, this all factors in. I cannot, what was exactly?
Well, how does it affect our ability to deal with them?
Yeah, yeah, to deal with them. Yes. So that's where we are. We are then in this polarized, you know, kind of divided society, people that, you know, trust experts and people that are, you know, that do not simply. And I guess this fits well with general societal developments of, you know, division and polarity, where can now it's experts and non-experts or something like this, left and right politics.
It's one of the other crises that feeds into the bigger crises of the wicked problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And now while we talk to each other, like my cocks are going in my head, like how the conspiracy crisis affects educational crisis, which then again, you know, fires back at the climate crisis and the coronavirus crisis. And
one of the things I guess we have to deal with, like, you know, people get exhausted. You know, you're starting to see this with COVID already, I'm sure, in certain elements of climate crisis as well. You know, how do we avoid complacency or resignation when we're faced with these problems? How do we maintain society's will to fight?
Yeah, that's a good one too. So in my work, we are thinking a bit about how we can manage these problems. And one of the main concepts we come up with is that the failure has to be embraced. So I'm not gonna be able to manage this problem. As I said, we basically don't have solutions to them. So everything I do will end in a failure, but I need to regroup quickly and, you know, try again. So there's this, I guess it's a change of culture, political culture, but also societal culture, that we're not gonna, you know, have these one trick solutions to everything. So everything we do going forward in politics is gonna be this trial and error and quick regrouping and go from there. where this starts, it probably starts with, you know, how we socialize in schools. Something we are also thinking about is that even in schools, you're being taught to find solutions to problems. This seems to be the main thing we're doing, and we're doing the same here at the university. But we should switch it actually around, and we should try to understand problems rather. So if we have our wicked problems where we don't know the problem, we should kind of switch our attention more to the problem itself and not to the solutions. So kind of a whole, it's a massive change in thinking. Yeah. So if that's where you start, usually these kind of revolutions of the mind, I guess, in the school system, and hopefully a new generation of politicians and also voters and citizens have this kind of mindset where it's harder to identify the problem, but that's what we need to work on. And then we can try to tackle it. Maybe one of the things we say as the policy suggestion is, if you deal with a wicked problem, you need to understand it as a wicked problem. This is the first thing you need to do, and also very hard thing, because this means you're gonna deal with this forever. But this is very important to understand it as such. And
I guess there are probably questions of, like you were saying earlier, about communication to society, to the voters, from institutions, and saying, okay, well, we have to accept the fact that we're only mitigating here as opposed to solving some things.
Yeah, but I think this is really a wide-ranging change in society. This is not just one politician basically saying, I'm going to fail every week now, yeah, so bear with me. This is not necessarily going to work. And also, something you mentioned is this kind of, how do we keep our spirits up? So this is also part of our ideas, how to govern these problems. So yes, I know I will fail every time I try to, but I still need to act like I have a shot at not failing. Mm-hmm. And if I stop doing this, then also all my attempts that, yes, will eventually fail are definitely not going to do anything for us.
And understanding, like, there's, even if things turn out worse than they were, it doesn't mean that they were worst case scenario.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well said, Terry.
Well, you're helping me understand here.
Are there wicked problems you foresee on the horizon that we should, you know, start worrying about or acting upon now?
I don't know. I mean, there's, you know, actually the coronavirus crisis, if I might go there for a moment, is maybe this is our chance for once to see a wicked problem go away. I guess. So like once the pandemic becomes endemic, as they say, so it's just going to be another disease we're dealing with, then it actually seems like this might be one of the first times we didn't solve it, but we managed to get through it. And now it's just kind of part of what we're doing. So this should be how we approach all of them if they're coming to us. But thinking to the future, I mean, we have to solve, and now I'm using this word to solve, but we have to address, manage, tackle the climate crisis by all means. This is the one large one that is sitting there in front of us the whole time already. There are going to be economic crises. In my book, there are also wicked problems. At least what we have seen in 2008, 9, 10, this is again a global crisis. Everybody is being affected. Of course, everybody is differently affected. So this is another thing. With these wicked problems, there seems to be some aspect of them feasting on the weaker, whether it's the globally, mm-hmm. in the global south, people are more affected by coronavirus, by climate change, economic crisis, but also in our societies, it's, economically, weaker parts of the society and minorities that are often more affected by these problems. I'm regressing here. So, climate crisis, that's the one. I also think if we don't deal with this one, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, in a way, we need to manage this one so we can see other wicked problems.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, a lot of our other wicked problems that you've mentioned, migration, economic, what have you, all feed into the climate wicked problem anyway. Well, Ben, considering it's your birthday, happy birthday. Do you have any optimistic thoughts on our ability to deal with the problems of the future?
Well, I mean, I do, but there's a lot of work we have to do. The coronavirus crisis actually showed us a lot of the strategies that can work, as I said. So transparency, this idea that I will fail doing what I'm doing. Actually, I feel like politicians have shown great aptitude here by, speaking every week in front of, giving every week a press conference. It's minor steps, but giving every week press conferences with experts' involvement. So these are good strategies we need to take now to deal with the major problem. So like, everything I have seen, how we try to address the climate crisis, didn't really work. It's usually a lot of what we shouldn't be doing. So we're signing the Kyoto Protocol, and then we are not coming back to it for 10 years. And then it turns out, it actually didn't work, where we should, after 1 week, have a look and then adjust the protocol. So if we can take some lessons from the coronavirus crisis and actually apply them to the climate crisis. There's also some hope, of course, that this kind of the coronavirus crisis allows us now to transition to a different type of economy. I don't know if this is really something that's happening, but the whole home offices and maybe not caring so much about about your work and making more money and consuming all of this, what we have seen actually happen in the crisis now, if we can now take these lessons and keep on doing this, there's some hope. I think so for the climate crisis. So let's make kind of our homework. Let's see what worked now and what didn't work in this crisis, and then try to apply it to the next one. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for joining us again on the Talon University podcast. Thanks to Ben for appearing, especially on his birthday. Happy birthday to you, Ben. As usual, we are brought to you by the Talon University School of Governance, Law and Society, and the Baltic Film, Media and Arts School here at Talon University. Our producer is Alvo Ulvik. Our research coordinator is Vega Smolue. And we've had additional contributions by Aniruddha Inamdar, Jana Levitinia, Kano Yusui, Catherine Helen Kasavandik, and Temitope Aluko. Our theme song is Ghost of 68, performed by myself and Paul Simmons, and any additional music is composed and performed by myself for Ava Ulvik. You can find us on Twitter at Talon Podcast and Facebook and Instagram at TLU Podcast. If you want to learn more about Talon University, you can check out www.tlu.ee. And we'll see you in the next episode.